Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our service on this lovely Sunday morning. My name is Maeve Edwards, and I'm a member of this church. The timing of this, my first service, is not ideal, as I am currently undergoing a dental procedure, which has affected my speech a little bit, so I hope you can hear me, and apologies in advance if you can't. On my first visit here to this church, I heard for the first time words spoken by Bridget from the pulpit that were to bring me back again the following week and again over the last 20 years. Those words were, anything I say here are my own views and you don't have to agree with them. The simplest of words but with a powerful punch, particularly for those of us brought up in a tradition that allowed no deviation from its dogmas and teachings. I echo Bridget's words here this morning. It is a tradition in our church for members of this congregation to take the service from time to time. It is my privilege this morning to share my thoughts with you, whether you are here in front of me or listening at home on the webcam. And a special shout out to my dear friend, Jane Meredith, who's watching this morning. Join us in peace and hope, for everyone is welcome here. I will now light our chalice, which is a symbol of our faith, which is lit everywhere Unitarians gather in prayer, in celebration, in searching, and in love. I would now like to read from Sister Stanislaus Kennedy's book, Gardening the Soul. There are 365 entries in this book, one for every day of the year. I will read the entry for this date, 6th of September. Before we can truly experience our connectedness with the earth and the animals and all creation, we need to be connected within ourselves. We need to learn how to be contented and at home in our own company, to know how to take time alone. The more we know ourselves, the more we see our connection with others. We can only love others when we love ourselves, and we can only learn to love our community and the community of all people when we recognize that everything and everyone is related to everything and everyone else, because the divine is in each and every one of us. Before we go to our first hymn, my family is watching from Norway, Alan, Kaya, and my two grandchildren, Sol and Anya. A special hello to them. And my son, Kian, in Thailand, if he's watching. Our first hymn this morning is number 12, O life that maketh all things new. Our first reader this morning is Robin.
Good morning, everybody. I'm going to read a short poem by Mary Oliver. I'd like to say initially that 3 or 4 weeks ago, one of our congregation came in that door and someone said, I'm looking forward to your reading. And she didn't know she was doing the reading that day. I said, were you worried? No, I just fell back on Mary Oliver. Then Maeve asked me to do a reading today and to do something about joy. So I used Mary Oliver before, so fell back on her again today. She is now the Dolly Parton and the Katie Taylor of this church. So it's Don't Hesitate by Mary Oliver. If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give in to it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed are about to be. We are not wise and not very often kind, and much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is in its way of fighting back, that sometimes something happens better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything, but very likely you notice it in the instant when love begins. That's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb.
Thank you, Robin. Our children's story this morning will be read by Jennifer Flegg.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Perhaps we should call it story time rather than a children's story, because the story I've chosen to tell is from Bill Darlison. Bill used to be minister here before Bridget. He made a collection of stories from around the world, and he called it The Shortest Distance. At the beginning of the book, quotes from Anthony de Mello, who was again quoting some guru from way back, who said, "The shortest distance between truth and a human being is a story." So with that in mind, I've chosen a story from Bill's book. And just before I start on it, I wonder if you were asked which of all the stories you've heard in this church you remember. And I suppose I've heard hundreds. And some of them I have remembered very clearly. I don't know what it is that makes a story stick, but this one has stuck with me. And I think of it, perhaps not every day, but a couple of times a week, I think. Anyway, here it is. Once upon a time, not that long ago, a young man was walking along a beach, and the tide was quite far out. And he couldn't help but notice the whole beach was littered with starfish. They'd been washed in on the tide, and they'd been left there when the tide retreated, so they were stranded. The tide was far out, and they were still alive, but only just, and they wouldn't survive. They wouldn't live until the tide came in again. They would all die. So anyway, the young man was walking along, admiring the view and the day and all the rest of it, and he noticed an elderly woman a little distance from him, and she seemed to be bending down a lot, and he went up to her and asked what she was doing. And before she answered, she bent down and she picked up one of the starfish and she threw it, mighty throw, into the receding tide. And he said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Well, I'm throwing the starfish back into the sea." And he said, "Well, what's the point of that?" He said, "There are thousands of them here. You're not going to make a difference." And she stood up straight and she looked at him, and she picked up another starfish and she threw it into the sea, and she said, "Well, it made a difference to that one."
Thank you, Jennifer. It's a wonderful story. Our second hymn this morning is number 410, Surprised by Joy. For our second reading this morning, I have chosen a poem by Evan Boland, which addresses my theme here today. The poem is called This Moment. A neighborhood at dusk. Things are getting ready to happen out of sight. Stars and moths and rinds slanting around fruit. But not yet. One tree is black. One window is yellow as butter. A woman leans down to catch a child who has run into her arms this moment. Stars rise, moths flutter, apples sweeten in the dark. And now we have a period of personal reflection which will be brought to a close by a piece of music played by Josh. I invite you to sit comfortably, close your eyes if you wish, settle back in your seat. Take a moment to become present. Notice your breathing in and your breathing out. Calm your thoughts. Embrace the quietness around you. Be still. The best of life is life lived quietly, where nothing happens but our calm journey through the day, where change is imperceptible and the precious life is everything. Words from John McGahern's memoir, All Will Be Well. Why is it that the advent of September, with all its glorious apple-ripe mornings, can sometimes evoke in us a feeling of loss? Is it an echo of the melancholy we felt as children with the ending of carefree summer days and the start of another school year? Or is it a natural phenomenon that happens to all Earth's creatures as the year begins to slowly come to an end? Even when the late August sun shows no sign of waning, this sadness can sneak up on us and catch us off guard. It might start as an ache, a hint of melancholia in the pit of our stomachs, a longing deep in our hearts. It might be prompted by the sight of a cobweb glistening with dewdrops in the early morning light. Or later, at the kitchen sink, an earwig might escape from the dahlias you've cut for your windowsill. And there it is, that stab of yearning, even as you capture the creature and ferry it back outside. And as you place it in the garden, there it is again, that wistfulness, that pang of sadness, telling us autumn is coming, the year is dying, the days are growing shorter. The well of grief inside you threatens to overwhelm. Sometimes your eyes fill with tears, startling even you, who thought you had all this grief under control. Most of us have had life-altering events in our lives. Most of us know what it is to suffer the heartbreak of losing a child, a spouse, a dear friend. We've had to learn to pick ourselves up, to salve over the grief, to bury the sorrow deep inside ourselves and face the world with a brave front. I believe the Irish language deals with emotions in a very good way. There is an Irish word, uigness, which we learnt in school as children. It is a deeply evocative word that can mean loneliness or sadness or even a sense of solitude when one feels a need to be quiet and alone. Rather than saying, like we say in English, I am sad today, the translation into Irish gives us Tá uigeannas orm inniu. Sadness is upon me today. Sadness is only visiting me today. I will nod at it, recognise it, but it will soon pass. It will soon be gone. We say the same about happiness. Tá áthas orm inniu. Happiness is upon me today. Today I am happy. How wonderful is the Irish way, though. Rather than the grief or joy defining us, it is only upon us for a time. These emotions will pass. I will recognise them, pay attention to them, but soon they will be gone. They don't permeate my whole being. They don't become me. They don't define me. The tradition of wearing a black armband or a small black diamond sewn onto the upper sleeve of a coat has died out now in Ireland. What a pity this is. Being aware that someone is in mourning can spark a compassion and an understanding that may not have been there before. It's a signal to be careful, a reminder that we should be gentle in our interactions with that person, a caution that they have lost a loved one. On a shelf in my living room beside where I sit at night are four photographs. There used to be three there until recently, when I had to add a fourth. These photographs are of beloved family members and friends who have died, the latest only last November. When I look at the image of one or other of them, I can say, today, my dear sister, just for a moment, Tá uigeannas orm when I think of you. Living is hard sometimes. It's not easy. We must learn to navigate our way through all the obstacles life throws at us. But to experience deep grief, we must also know what it is to deeply love. To love and to suffer means we are human beings. It is all part of life's rich tapestry. Along with the well of grief inside us, there is also a deep well of joy. And just like grief can catch us unawares, so also can joy. We must learn to harness it, take it out when we need it most, to constantly look for ways to be surprised by joy, as William Wordsworth says in his poem, which he wrote in memory of his daughter Catherine, who died when she was 3 years old. We must constantly try to make the moment sacred, to use one of Gavin's words. Some of my favourite Irish writers write about just that, finding the sacred in the ordinary, finding joy in the everyday. The cool that came off the sheets, says Seamus Heaney, writing about that most mundane of tasks, folding sheets with his mother in the kitchen. So we'd stretch and fold and end up hand to hand for a split second as if nothing had happened, for nothing had that had not always happened beforehand, day by day, just touch and go, coming close again by holding back, in moves when I was X and she was O, inscribed in sheets she'd sewn from ripped out flour sacks. Seamus Heaney's words elevate this ordinary domestic chore of folding sheets just off the line into a ritual of love between a mother and her son. When all the others were away at Mass, Seamus Heaney also writes, I was all hers as we peeled potatoes, broke the silence, let fall one by one, like solder weeping off the soldering iron. Again, an ordinary domestic chore like peeling potatoes has been made sacred by turning it into a homage of love to his mother. But those wells of grief and joy inside us are inextricably linked. Sometimes they boil over into each other. I often write about my brother Eamon, who was born when I was 10 years old. I often refer to him as my golden brown brother in the lemon seersucker romper suit. Our mother, a dressmaker, made a lemon seersucker romper suit for him, which he seemed to wear all that summer of 1960, sitting outside our house in his pram with a crust of batch loaf in his fist. When he hears this description of himself at 1 year old, he tells me he must leave his house and go down to the end of his garden and cry long, wailing tears. Are they tears of grief, or is it joy that makes him cry? Perhaps it's a nostalgia for lost years, of yearning for a time when we were young, with all life's possibilities still ahead of us. Whatever it is, it's healing. We always laugh then, he and I, when he tells me, you had me bawling again. But doesn't Patrick Kavanagh nail what I am trying to say here? In his poem, also to his mother, he says, going to second mass on a summer Sunday, you meet me and you say, don't forget to see about the cattle. Among your earthiest words, the angels stray. That's what we must find as we go about our day. Find the sacred, find the joy, find the place where the angels stray. It could be something as simple as sitting with your family on the sofa watching an episode of Father Ted. It hits you like a sledgehammer. My goodness, I am happy. I am happy to be here. Happiness is upon me. Tá áthasúram. I don't want to be anywhere else in the world right now, only here with my family on the sofa. Even with all our confusions and disarray, I wouldn't swap this moment for anything. And above all, we must be kind to each other. But I don't have to tell any of us here today to be kind, because kindness permeates this church's congregation, my beloved community. It was there when I first came to it in 2007, when Bill Darlison stood in this pulpit Sunday after Sunday and urged us to be kind, to be awestruck, to find joy in the ordinary, to find beauty in the natural world all around us. It was there aplenty all the way through Bridget's tenure, and it is there in abundance in the first few months of Gavin's. How lucky are we to have this place to come to each week. I often say to myself after service on a Sunday, if I do nothing else today, my soul has been nourished. Nourished by beautiful words from this pulpit, nourished by music, nourished by the affection we have for each other. I will give the second last word to Leonard Cohen. In this very short poem, he urges us to pay attention to love, recognize it. Don't wait until it is gone before you see what was there in front of you all the time. The poem reads, with Annie gone, whose eyes to compare with the morning sun, not that I did compare, but I do compare now that she's gone. And now, with autumn on its way, with its glorious crisp mornings and low September sun, I will give the last word to Patrick Kavanagh's Raglan Road, which Josh played for us beautifully earlier, when he bravely accepts the pain that comes with deep affection, saying those words that echo deep in my heart. And I said, let grief be a fallen leaf at the dawning of the day. Amen. Our third hymn this morning is hymn number 77, Seek Not Afar for Beauty. Thank you.
Good morning. So I have our notices this morning, and firstly, to everyone who contributed to our service this morning, thank you. Thank you, Maeve, for a beautiful service, for a wonderful address. Paul Luchar Orum, which is even more than joy, great pleasure. So there's a new Irish word for our visitors. Our weekly service of reflection in the church continues this and every Wednesday from 1:05 p.m. to 1:35 p.m. The church choir will resume for the autumn next Sunday, the 13th of September at 10 a.m. We have a full program from now till the end of the year. And if I may mention the C word, Christmas is coming. So if anyone would like to join the choir, please talk to Josh after the service. The next Heart and Soul Contemporary Spiritual Gathering is on Monday, the 21st of September at 7. Please let Shari know if you'd like to attend. The second of our historical city walks, led by Rory Delaney, will take place next Sunday after coffee. Rory's going to take us on the bus to Mount Jerome Cemetery. And Mount Jerome is the final resting place of many of the ancestors of this congregation. So that promised to be a very interesting walk. The book club is reading Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome. If you want to join the book club, please speak to Alison, and Alison is here today. The book club usually gather on the last Wednesday of the month in the vestry at 7:30 p.m. Now, this congregation has a number of other groups, apart from the walking and the reading, other groups who gather due to shared interests, and the newest one is called the Unitarian Cultural Group. They will organise trips to the theatre, to concerts, and to other cultural activities. Now, if you'd like to join this WhatsApp group, please speak to Therese after the service. Therese is down there. She'd be happy to add you to that WhatsApp group. Culture Night is Friday, the 18th of September, and our programme this year will begin at 6 o'clock with an address from me, What Do These Unitarians Believe? Now, many of you may have already heard that, but I've put a couple of addresses together into one, around 20 minutes, as an introduction for visitors to this community. At 7 o'clock then, we will have an organ recital curated by Olesya Borsuk, and many of you know Olesya. She's played here many times before. At 8 o'clock, Josh and Mark Hutchinson will present Mind Travels. And finally, at 9 p.m., Glorella, a female a cappella choir, will perform a number of pieces. If you'd like to volunteer, we've got quite a few already, but if you'd like to volunteer on the night to give an hour or two, please let me or Josh know. And duties will include primarily welcoming people and keeping an eye on the door. We have had up to 1,000 people come on Culture Night last year, so we do expect a similar, if not a greater, number. Now, finally, at our harvest service, which will be on the 18th of October this year, we invite anyone who has been coming to the church for about a year to sign our membership book and become a member of this congregation. All we ask of members is that they make a commitment to participate in the life of this community while, where possible, to contribute to the financial costs running this congregation. I have application forms here. If anyone would like to take one, have a look at it and sign it, bring it back over the next couple of weeks. So that is our harvest service, will be also our membership service.
Thank you, Gavin. Our final hymn is hymn number 129, Let Love Continue Long. Words from John O'Donohue. Praise be the fathomless universe for the impulse that unites us in the quiet echo of the heart. May we see the wonder of the small things and find the sacred in the day. Thank you.